This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
It is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also up on TSN 4. Mark Rowe in for Brian Hayes once again. And once again, I'm joined by Mike Johnson. We're so glad that you've joined us. And if you're listening in the Toronto area or watching in the Toronto area, you've just gone through a tornado watch, so we hope that you're safe. Mike, I know that you're worried about the studio here. The walls are still standing, so don't worry about that. And I can see on our television feed that... you know, Casa Mike over there looks okay, so good to hear.
I think we just missed it, but if you're watching or listening to us, then at least you still have power, because apparently a large swath of western part of Toronto is currently without power under about a couple feet of rain. So, but you can feel it. You know when it's so hot for so long, and then while we all appreciate the four seasons, and I don't care about hot weather, when it gets this muggy like it has been the last week, at some point, there will be some sort of violent rainstorm coming. And that was maybe just the first little taste of it. Because it was quick, it was like 30 minutes, but it was, I guess, fairly powerful and some trees down and stuff like that. So stay safe and stay dry, and hopefully the power stays on for everybody. Because we need the air conditioning running if you have it.
Like a hitter whose batting average is under the Mendoza line, we were due for this rain.
That's it. So, like the grass in the morning, we were due.
Yeah, exactly. I have good news. As a man who loves sports, sports is happening. MLS is back tonight. Miami versus Orlando. They will actually play a match. And tomorrow, Mike, the Toronto Blue Jays will play an intra-squad game. So there you go.
Listen, cause for celebration.
There you go.
I don't care. It's been 120 days. Let's not be picky here. Although, with the way the MLS has gone, I'm kind of going to want to wait right to kickoff before I get too excited, because I need
you
to
hear
see.
That? Okay, there you go. There's me knocking on wood.
There it is. Because did we see that the Nashville soccer team had a rash of positive tests as well, and to the point where probably they won't be able to play. So there are some issues going on with that. But listen, absolutely, it will be great, like, to flip on the TV tonight and watch live team sports in North America. It will be nice. It will be really, really nice to watch them. I'm curious about this whole beyond the health ramifications. I want to watch this MLS tournament of sorts, the World Cup style thing they have going on. One, because I like TFC, but two, just to see how it all goes down and to watch the players in a bit of a different format. Will be fun if they're able to get it all done.
Yeah, and you brought up TFC. Their game moved to Sunday at 9 a.m. It's like waking up and watching the EPL.
How about, though, if you are, now TFC, I guess you have to be flexible. You could play on Thursday or you could play on Sunday. You know, things get shifted around. But I'm thinking if you're television programming and you're broadcast, like, you set a schedule and they're just getting shifted around left and right as teams drop out of tournaments, that would be taxing for everyone. So I think once they get going, if they get going and they kind of teams start playing and stay in the bubble and are testing negative, it will be interesting to watch how the momentum builds throughout the tournament, because I'm into watching it, but I can't tell you what all the groups are, and I know who's in TFC's group, but I don't know kind of the full format until we kind of get going with it. So we'll hopefully get that going tonight and tuning into TFC when they get their first game on the weekend.
It'll be a nice win/if in some cases these leagues get going, to be a reminded of things that we forgot about over the last 4 months, and to kind of immerse yourself into those things that we usually are. Like you just mentioned, like the groups, and usually we would be all over that, but because so many other things are going on, and we spend, you know, this 3-hour show talking about almost everything but soccer or hockey or basketball in a way, just, you know, you're not focused on the fact that it's DC United and Montreal, and, you know, Toronto and Montreal, like that's, once they get going, that's going to be great, but we haven't really hyped that up very much.
No. With the real world crashing on top of sports, obviously.
Right.
And even as we crawl back to sports being played, you know, the real world impact on it is still the focus until we probably get actual sports. You know, we talked quite a bit about the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
Because it's going on.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked
We can talk about real golf things like Bryson DeChambeau driving a golf ball 370 yards.
Can we talk about Brooks Koepka and his tweet today? Did you see this?
No.
Well, fire up Brooks Koepka's Twitter feed, and he had like the googly eyes, like what's going on, and some sort of meme, GIF, whatever they're called, some guy, Kenny Powers.
Kenny Powers.
Reacting to a steroid allegation. I'm like, well, where's that?
I don't know if that,
because you know where it's going to go, right?
Yeah.
People are going to say, what's all the steroid talk? Or any kind of innuendo or cryptic kind of post, because one guy who just won has changed his body an awful lot. And, you know, people will probably jump to that conclusion, completely unfounded as of now, but I don't know. We need to get Brooks on the air and find out what's he talking about with that thing.
He's not returning my calls. So
no,
we got
a text out and we'll see.
But the guys on First Up were talking about that earlier this week, and it was the first time I really thought about it. It's I guess natural in, you know, this world that you're wondering how a player is taking advantage of their situation. And it doesn't necessarily have to be like steroids in the way that we saw, you know, Ben Johnson take steroids, but there could be something that Bryson DeChambeau is taking that is either illegal and they haven't caught it, or he's taking something that eventually golf will say, okay, we don't want players taking this. Mm. Just because anytime that someone has a before and after picture like he does over 4 months, we're going to say, wow, how did you do it? And are we buying the fact that you did it on working out and eating 4 eggs, 5 pieces of bacon, 2 protein shakes just in the morning, right, and 2 slices of toast, and then 5 other protein shakes throughout the day and steak and potatoes at night?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's one way to put on weight, but, you know, you got to work out along with it. I don't know. I mean, three months, he put on like 30, 35 pounds of you know,
muscle.
Mass.
Yeah.
You know, how much of it's muscle, how much of it is not. But, like, that's hard to do even when you are committed to eating the grotesque amount of calories that he seems to be putting in his body. So, anyways, I saw it today, and Brooks Koepka has never been one to feel the need to go along to get along. He will ruffle feathers. He will talk about fellow players candidly. Not necessarily disrespectfully, but candidly, which not all athletes will do. So
his reputation has been about doing stuff differently than most of the field. And whether that was, remember he had the weird putting stance, the golf clubs all being the same size, whether
even
it's
his yardage book had all these different numbers, you know, gravitational pull, earth axis, you name it. But that doesn't matter. I mean, you can do it any way you want. You can play with 14 putters, whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he didn't put up a picture of a mad scientist and calculations flying around the head. He put up a reaction to a steroid allegation when the guy who just won last week put on 40 pounds of muscle in the last 4 months.
Right. And on TSN 4 right now, the Brooks Koepka tweet is being shown, and it's Kenny Powers from the HBO show where he was confronting steroid allegations, and he's running after a news camera and just kind of ripping down the news camera. So actually, you're right. I did see that yesterday. I forgot about it, and I thought of Bryson right away, although, you know, it's not like Brooks is super skinny.
Well, there's some before and after pictures of Brooks where he looks like, you know, string bean like myself, and then now he looks quite a bit different, but some of that is just maturity. I mean, and take a picture of most teenage guys at 17. They don't look the same as they do when they're 24.
Right.
So, anyways, we'll see, and I mean, I don't know if steroids specifically, so we kind of get off on this tangent, would be an issue for golf, generally speaking. I don't think historically golfers were likely to take steroids.
Yeah.
Muscle building steroids. If you look at the history of the game, doesn't look like a lot of that's been going on.
Well, okay. How many times have you heard this at an NHL draft or NFL draft? Really good. Needs to put on 20 pounds worth of muscle. And I'll give a shout out to our buddy Martin Baron, because it's the anniversary of when he got drafted. And Bob McKenzie literally says that on the broadcast because he's 150 pounds.
Yeah.
I don't remember anyone saying that in golf, or it doesn't say, it's not said very often. Oh, he's really good, but if only he put on 15 pounds of muscle, he can really start competing with these guys. Like, Jim Furyk is not exactly this huge guy, and he's had one of the best careers that we've seen on the PGA Tour. But maybe there's a way that Bryson DeChambeau is kind of like we've had the Tiger Woods conversation, changing the game, and the fact that courses might have to change if this becomes a trend. Not every guy is going to be a willing and be able to do what he just did. And it's also not, you know, like you think of, you know, screwing around with your swing. Like,
right.
This could have blown up in his face. It's not like Bryson DeChambeau was this no-name golfer, and it's like, well, I got nothing else to, you know, to risk.
Nothing
here.
To lose here.
Nothing to lose here, exactly. Why not throw a bunch of weight on and see where it takes me? It's worked out so far. I'd love to see what he can do at the majors, and especially at Augusta. But,
You know what's interesting, though, is that, like, golf, because it's played on a, much like hockey, I guess, every sport, on a finite field, like, at some point, if you can hit it that far or that straight, the golf course has become almost a little obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can take a 470-yard hole and hit driver sand wedge over and over, that's not how those holes, like, that's not how golf courses are designed to play, that's not how the green complexes are built. All of it, it just changes because so much of golf is about the course as well. And they've tried to do it, you know, they always move tees back, and now we see championship courses that are 73, 74, 100 yards. But, you know, I was watching on the weekend when DeChambeau's hitting him 375 off a tee on a 458 hole, and he has like a little tiny flip wedge. It's just, it is, do they have to go down the road of limiting the balls or the drivers, or, you know, just to make sure, okay, listen, no matter how hard you swing, you're not going to hit over 310. Because golf courses, all the famous ones that we're playing, are not designed for golf balls that fly 350 in the air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we've had these, and we always have these conversations when something like this happens.
Yeah.
When, you know, obviously Tiger, but also, you know, when Rory kind of burst onto the scene, Dustin Johnson, do you change courses? Do you change the equipment? You know, you hear it so much in golf. You hear it a little bit in hockey when, like, you know, goaltenders and the equipment more so than...
Make the net bigger, shrink the goalie pads, make the rink bigger, all these different ideas that are kicked around.
Yeah.
So, it's fascinating. But anyways, I saw that, I guess he put it out yesterday, but I saw the Koepka thing this morning, and I was like, Brooksy, stirring it up a little
bit. Yeah, cryptic or not so much, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
To quickly go back to the Blue Jays, one of your favorite players, because I know we did Jerry's percentage, and you believe that he will be on the Blue Jays this year. Mm-hmm. Their draft pick, Austin Martin, did you see that he just signed a deal?
It's just another step in his inevitable rise to the roster spot that I guaranteed him on Jerry's percentages.
Mike, just north of $7 million.
Wow. Well, I mean,
now that's baseball, almost the same as you out of Bowling Green.
Well, yes, that's right. We had a cap back then on rookie deals. But I think baseball is interesting because their first contracts are so strange. They're staggered, tiered based on where you're picked.
Exactly.
But then if you save money on one guy, you can spend it more on another guy. It's more convoluted than I could even explain. But good for him. It's a good number. And he's a bit of a different prospect because he's not a teenager. You know, some baseball picks are 18-year-old guys leaving high school. Mm-hmm. Some first-round picks are 21-year-old guys leaving university. He's the older, the latter version. And you get that amount of money, it's not to spend 6 years in the minors. It's probably to spend 2 years in the minors if the world was operating normally, but without it operating normally, he's got to be on the 60-man roster, because you're not going to take a talent like that you just invested that amount of money in and not have him around and just waste an entire summer and fall of development because there's nowhere else for him to play. So I think you're going to have him, if only to coach him up, just to have him going through development drills and batting sessions and whatever else he needs to do to continue to improve on the path that he's on, because he's too important to waste a year sitting out.
Yeah, and how teams, and this isn't just baseball, develop players over the next few years
will be fascinating.
It's going to be a study to analyze. Like, you're already seeing minor league teams not just have their season wiped out, but organizations are getting rid of certain teams and getting rid of some staff because, you know, you would have, you know, a bunch of class A, Double A, Triple A, if you're in the Blue Jays organization, you go from, you know, Vancouver to Dunedin to Lansing to Buffalo, then you make it to Toronto. You know, it might be a shorter runway to get to the majors. because of that. And for sports with a salary cap, and a salary cap like in the NHL that's not going up anytime soon, there's going to be a need, like if you're the Maple Leafs, to expedite the talent from the Marlies, yeah, who are making less than $1 million a year, who need to step up because, you know, we can't afford to bring in, you know, a guy who's played in the NHL for 10 years who could really help us on the right side on the blue line, because we're stuck. We're stuck when it comes to the numbers.
Or is that guy who plays for 10 years not going to be making the same as the rookies?
Right.
I mean, like both things will probably happen at the same time, but it will. The compression of dollars will make the development of mm-hmm. players more important in every sport, because sure, you won't have as much time and you won't be able to make as many mistakes and you won't be able to be wrong with assets like you maybe could have before. So, it's really, really interesting. And for baseball, you feel bad for the guys. I mean, we think about the MLB players, of course, because that's what we're focused on and that's what we know. But, you know, so many of these guys make a living chasing a dream, you know, not growing up just yet, and they won't get to do that anymore. And even if they are never really going to make it to the major leagues, they're playing the Double A and they've been there for a long time, you know, that kind of dream, that part of their life might effectively be over because of this, and mm-hmm. and that'll be no fun. And for hockey players, you know, I think of those guys, they have some decisions to make.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to be sure what next year is going to look like. And if you're going to go play in Europe, which I think those leagues are going to start up in Europe before the ones start up here in North America, you have to make that decision in August. So if you're even a North American-born player, forget about a European-born player, it maybe makes more sense just to stay at home. But if you're a North American guy and you're 21 years old, if you're not in the NHL, what are you going to do, Mark?
Yeah.
I mean, you got to make a call, and that call might be like, I got to go sign in Finland because I need a place to play.
And I don't want to take a chance.
And I can't roll the dice that it doesn't work out here, and all of a sudden I'm left not playing for a year, and then my window's shut. So a lot of stuff, minor league level, going on. We'll get into it later, too. You know, university sports news going on there with Stanford cutting a whole bunch of sports. And I just read the Ivy League is canceling all fall sports, and hockey winter sports are not going to start till January. So the landscape is shifting quickly. You know, as crazy enough, American schools kind of get back to school in like 5-6 weeks.
It happens quickly. And so, it's not going to be, they will play football as soon as they can. And they will play men's basketball as soon as they can.
Well, if you're Jim, did you hear Jim Harbaugh?
Yes. Sports.
Oh, my God. Now, apparently, according to him, they'd be playing football today if they could.
Right.
Did he suggest that
COVID is a part of our society? It wasn't caused by football or caused by sports. There's no expert view right now that I'm aware of that sports is going to make that worse.
I'm not sure about that last statement. I mean, certainly sports with fans has been guaranteed
how do you
to
play,
make it worse.
How do you play sports? At least in 2020, we haven't totally gone virtual. We can't play, we can play
in person.
Esports.
Yes.
You are together. And he coaches a sport where there's a lot of physical contact. That is what we're trying to minimize here, right?
And he may have the idea that it will spread wildly through the players and then into society. Maybe he's trying to argue that, which we still don't want to take that risk. But how about just a modicum of concern for your athletes?
Yeah.
Like just a smidge.
Yeah.
Like we don't want to put them
in harm's way.
A situation where they might be at risk. Even if the risk is small. Even if they're likely to be able to get over the virus if they get it and it won't be fatal to them. Do we know enough about the long-term effect? Like, come on. That is... I know football coaches want to coach, and that's what their focus is. And I bet the players all want to play, but sometimes you got to protect the athletes from themselves and protect these amateur athletes that they keep calling and not just throw them in there because what? Because the TV contracts or they want to play or you got a big... Like, that is the wrong attitude to have about that.
Some tough decisions to be made. College sports, professional sports. I'm using the word decision for a reason, Mike. Because 10 years ago today, mm-hmm. the decision was made by LeBron James. And the man who is behind the television production of that, Don Van Natta Jr., is going to join us at 5:05.
Awesome.
I'm going to assume he's got a million stories to tell. He's a big mm-hmm. part of ESPN's backstory, so we'll chat with him then. Speaking of ESPN, Steve Levy is going to join us next, one of their top broadcasters who does it all from hockey, calls football. He was their lead guy for the XFL that fell apart again, this time because of a pandemic. So we'll chat with him when we return here on Overdrive on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4.
Now, back to Overdrive.
Overdrive continuing on TSN 1050, the TSN app, but also on TSN 4. Mark Rowe and Mike Johnson with you. The 4 o'clock hour brought to you by LeaseBusters. They will rescue you from your car lease. LeaseBusters, heroic, maybe, helpful, totally. People would love to take over your car lease. For your lease relief, go to LeaseBusters.com. One sign that we are getting a little bit closer to hockey being played, Mike, Bob McKenzie tweeting out the referees and the linesmen
right.
who will be a part of the two hub cities. And you better believe Wes McCauley, that's a no goal, will be part of it.
You know what? It's another part, another piece of the puzzle that everyone has to decide on. For the referees and the linesmen, getting these assignments are basically the reward for doing a good job. I think as they are evaluated, either based on the feedback from the players, managers, and the league, if they are considered to have done a good job, they get to work into the playoffs and deeper into the playoffs and bigger games and bigger games. So all the guys who are working now, congratulations to them. And I think they are also, they're in the bubble. They'll have to be, obviously, because they'll be in contact with the players. So they will be moving in with all the guys out into Edmonton and into the CNE grounds. Hotel X, is that where they're all going to stay? Is that a confirmed story?
I don't know.
That's where they're all going to go.
I don't know if like those are the reports that I've
seen.
I don't know if I would say that's confirmed yet. Although
actually, Toronto's not even confirmed. Who are we kidding? Like officially, because it's not confirmed until the CBA is signed.
Right. I guess so. Nothing's confirmed at this point.
Nothing is really confirmed.
But the official angle is, you know, we saw that in baseball and just in terms of their age and being vulnerable to the virus.
Big, you know, Joe West?
Yeah, Joe West is not respecting this virus at all. But
if anyone should,
yeah,
it feels like Big Joe West might want to give it the seriousness it's due.
A man I respect is our next guest. He is one of ESPN's most talented, versatile broadcasters. I can also tell you he's just generally a good guy. I'm done sucking up now. Steve Levy
apparently
joins us on Overdrive. How are you, Steve? What's going on?
No, don't stop, man. Keep going.
Okay.
I got plenty of time. I got nothing going on.
He makes sure that Barry Melrose is in check. I know that's a big part of your
that
job.
Is.
That is.
Not easy. Not easy.
And Barry's going to be revved to go. It's been 4 months. Are you more excited or is he more excited about the NHL returning?
You know what? It's so funny. Timing is everything. I just texted him. I mean, within the last 60 seconds, I read it to you verbatim. I said, hey, I'll see you in Edmonton in October, you know?
Yeah.
And and the next thing that comes back from him, $50 Kobe beef hamburger. Doesn't Ryan Smith have that restaurant in Edmonton?
Oh, okay.
And the last time we were there was probably for the, you know, Edmonton,
Carolina,
right?
Yeah.
Right.
And we wound up in Ryan Smith's restaurant like every night. It was the most expensive cheeseburger we ever had. It was good. And it was $50 good, but it was good.
Yeah, so, 50 Canadian, well, though. Like, that's not. That's, this is why the NHL is coming to Canada, right?
So, I think Barry's excited. You know, he's not technologically savvy. Like, all our people, I don't know how you guys are doing it, but on the TV side, we've got all these home studios built for all mm-hmm. the analyst opinion type guys. Mm-hmm. And so they put one in Barry's place down in Central Florida. And I'm sure there's no way he can figure it out. You know, but if it's more than like lifting a switch on, there's no way. And he's the guy, right, will be in shorts and a top, you know, with the tie and the jacket on. And, you know, he won't have the camera in focus. You'll see his awful ankles or something, maybe even worse, you know.
Yeah.
So
sometimes, you know what, Knowing what you don't know is as important as knowing what you do know. So
yeah,
you don't Barry's been smart
the big,
that way.
The big white legs, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Steve, where are you just kind of big picture about confidence level, all these sports in a variety of ways, MLS starting up tonight, baseball is on the horizon, hockey, basketball, football a little bit down the road. Just the likelihood of their success, concerns, how do you think this is all going to go over the next kind of 6 weeks?
You know, so it's tricky, man, right? Because, you know, you want to think with your head and not your heart. And so that's what I'm running into. And professionally for all of us, like, you know, I want to get back to work. Mm-hmm. I want to go back and do games and report and do what we all love to do. And that means games. And right now it's just anxious, right? It's unsettling. Every time you refresh Twitter, it seems like it's just bad news keeps coming, you know, positive tests everywhere. And so it for me personally, it's hard to see through all that. I think it was North Carolina, University of North Carolina, the football program. They just had a bunch of positive tests, and so they've shut down their voluntary college football workouts. And then the news from the Ivy League, all the wicked smart kids here in the States, they're going to not play any sports. I mean, not any sports until 2021. And how that impacts, you know, the Power Five in college football, I'm not really sure. It's a total different ball game, obviously, except for the sport itself. So I'm having a hard time to get through this. I'm looking forward to the MLS tonight to see that. I know, you know, a couple teams they already didn't even send because of positive tests. So, you know, everything seems so up in the air. I'm really kind of hoping for the best and kind of expecting the worst. And that's not a great way to live your day-to-day. But I think that's the reality where we're at right now.
Steve, if you had to pick, Steve, which one of the sports, because they've all kind of taken different paths to try to get their restart going, or in baseball's case, in football's case, their actual seasons, who do you feel best about and who do you feel worst about?
I think who I feel worst about in terms of the chances, the odds, I'm very concerned about the NBA. And you know, some of that is based on, you know, sort of out of their control. Just the state of Florida has just, you know, exploded with positive cases, and coupled with that is the negativity based on the dinner last night inside the NBA bubble. I don't know if you guys saw that.
That looks like cafeteria at its worst.
Picture, you know, that's not a that's an awful meal on a coach airplane. You know what I mean?
That's hospital food.
Really, and these NBA players, you know, they're used to, you know, 5-star hotels and 5-star meals everywhere they go. And look, we're seeing big name guys opt out. We're seeing it in baseball too. Players just opting out, and you know, football is really one of my big concerns because that's, you know, it's kind of my livelihood and how my fall sets up. And you know, I think the NFL is really going to try to power through, but you know, will there be a college game and how that impacts everything going forward? So, look, this is a really hard time to be a guest on, not just your show, but anybody's show. You know, I give you my sense of today, but we get new, you know, science and medical information, or something just breaks. And then everything you say today is really out the window tomorrow. So I don't believe anyone that knows for sure or that says they know for sure, but I do believe they're gonna give it their best. And no one will try harder than hockey and the National Hockey League to power through this thing as best they can. And so, again, I'm just hoping for the best, you know.
Steve Levy from ESPN joining us here on Overdrive. And you just mentioned that football is a big part of your calendar, and you call a lot of college football games. And I hope that you get to go to Bahamas again and call a bowl game. I know that's the more important thing. But, you know, it's one thing for Yale to say, we're out, we're not going to play our football season. But we were just talking about Jim Harbaugh's comments, and that it wasn't caused by football or caused by sports. There's no expert view out there that I'm aware of that sports is going to make this worse. Is that kind of sum up the attitude of college football at big programs and big conferences, that we're almost too big for this, and just the dollar amount that we bring in is going to really rule the day, and we're still going to have a season?
You know, Harbaugh is much more brash than I think a lot of the other big-time college football head coaches, although they might feel the same way he does. I don't think they would express that sentiment publicly. Look, it's a way of life in a lot of the U.S., especially in the South, right, in the SEC. Mm-hmm. You know, you think about the stadiums, and people might not get this, the stadiums in college football, generally speaking, are bigger than NFL stadiums. And that might surprise some people. The biggest stadiums in the U.S., right, are college football stadiums. You know, must be, I don't know, 15 of them are over 100,000 seats. Think about that for a second. And then when you couple that with, that's really, you know, 6 or 7 dates in the calendar year. That's it. A lot of these places, they're not having concerts also. There's no other team. There's no preseason games. It's, you know, it's 6 or 7 dates. These smaller college towns, they really do live on their college football. And the institutions themselves live off their college football. Stanford today, I don't know if you guys saw that.
Yeah,
they cut 11. Like 11 or 12 sports. Mm-hmm. I mean, just cut it to the bone. Honestly, if health came really first, we would not even be having this conversation. Mm-hmm. This is probably twofold. This is financial, and not in any particular order, although maybe some would say it is in a particular order, but this is financial and health when it comes to college football. And again, if it was just about the health, then nobody would risk it. You know what? The NFL wouldn't risk it either. If it was strictly about the health of these people, we would all say, hey, you know what? We'll see you in 2021 when we, A, have a better idea of what this is about, and B, when we have a much better chance of getting people into the stadiums and arenas. So it's twofold that way. So finances do play a huge role. None more so than in college football. And while the attendance is important, guys, the bulk of the money, let's not forget, comes from television. It's not like the NHL, which is really still, you know, revenue based on the tickets and the suites and all that. It's a nice chip in college football, but the bulk of college football and NFL money, by the way, comes from national television rights.
Yeah, and you know what? And that's why we're probably okay, Steve, because the pros, it's about health and money. But that's okay. They're grown adults and they can make those decisions for themselves and right. factor those two things into their own lives. These college players are, well, they might be over 18. They're still kids per se and under the care of the colleges. It just would be hard to suggest you, it's okay medically to do this if kids aren't on campus. I mean, if the student's not healthy enough for the students, safe enough for the students to be in classes, can we possibly say it's safe enough for the guys to be playing football? It's just a hard sell to make, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, you know, we sort of chuckle, we say student-athlete, you know what I mean? It's really athlete-student in a lot of cases. And listen, there must be heartbreaking conversations going on everywhere based on parents not wanting to send their kids, and their kids begging them, say, you know, this is what I love to do, I want to be around my buddies. The NFL draft, if it's, you know, if they're eligible next year or the year after, this is an important year for me. You know, and I'm sure, you know, the coaches are doing their best to, you know, try to get their top players in there. And as you guys know, like, you know, again, 18 or 19 years old is, you know, when you get to the pros, you only have so many years of earning potential. And in college, there's eligibility issues, getting these great healthy years on tape when you are healthy. You get more banged up as you go along, obviously. So you can imagine the emotions of not just the students themselves, the student athletes, but the parents. You know, sort of tugging at the heartstrings, and the purse strings play a big part of this as well. Hey, this is my draft year. I got to have a great year. I'm coming out next year, you know, and where are you going to be drafted? I mean, all these things. This is, you know, this is such a complicated, multifaceted decision that these young people really have to make. I don't envy them being in that position. I wouldn't want to make it for myself, and I wouldn't want to make it for my kids right now either.
Steve Levy from ESPN joining us on Overdrive. And one of the casualties of this pandemic was a league that you were closely aligned with, and that was the XFL 2.0. And we'll never know if it would have survived and gone on to flourish because of COVID-19. But, you know, once we get to whatever the new normal is, do you think there's still an appetite to have another professional football league in America, whether it's in the spring, or I can't imagine anyone would want to go up against the NFL, but do you think that is a possibility moving forward?
Absolutely, and I would not even be stunned if it's next spring. I mean, the ramp-up time will be the issue, but, you know, they went into bankruptcy, and I know there are multiple big-time bids to buy whatever is left of the product. The football was good. That was, you know, that was the thing we didn't know. We thought the broadcast would be good. That's what we do. Mm-hmm. We're professional broadcasters, and you know, and Fox and our guys, we rolled out all the big hitters and in front of the camera and behind the camera, took it very seriously. And the football was good. I think, you know, some 40 players from the XFL got drafted. I think the Steelers signed signed by NFL teams. I think the Steelers had 9 or 10 of those players themselves. So The talent was good. The games were good. The ratings were pretty good. And I think it would have gotten even bigger and better. It's another opportunity outside of college to get big-time professional coaching and get that valuable tape. And the NFL, in my opinion, the NFL loved it. The NFL loved the XFL. It was a free look-see, right?
Yeah.
For their coaches, their scouts, to watch on TV or on tape, didn't cost them a penny, and they got to see some talent and real game conditions while they're better coached than they were probably getting in college. So I definitely think it would have succeeded if not for the pandemic. I definitely think you will see it back. I'm not sure what form it'll look like. But I think the appetite is there for more football, yes.
Steve, you're involved in not calling football games. You do everything. We see you do everything in every possible role in sports media. What's your favorite? What's your favorite thing to do?
So I'm glad you asked that.
Get burgers
that. So
with Barry.
I am the luckiest guy in the industry. I've told anybody I'm close to. I really believe that, and that I've had the best mix, you know, kind of half the year on the road out of games and the other half on the SportsCenter desk. ER, not RE, and but my favorite assignment of the year, every year, is those 2.5-3 weeks at the Stanley Cup Final with my pal Barry Melrose. Mm-hmm. It's you know, it's a little too much red wine, a little too much red meat, way too many cigars. But,
cigars, Steve, but we see you every year.
That's a great time, you know.
Hunkered down with the wine and the cigars and Bear, I pass you about 5 times the Stanley Cup Final. Yeah. I'm like, hey guys, going off for your wine and your cigars every night.
Yeah. Good time.
The best was in 2015, rolling into the building in Tampa with Barry, and someone said, "Hey Barry, maybe you're going to sign some autographs." And he was like, "Yeah, I don't think they want my autograph inside this building."
the house that Melrose built, I like to call that.
That is true. So, Steve, great catching up with you. We hope that we hear your voice on some broadcasts soon, because that means that sports are back in October. In Edmonton, I hear it's beautiful, so enjoy that with Barry Melrose.
Mark, Johnny, thanks for having me on, and you guys stay healthy out there, and the best to all your listeners.
You got it. Steve Levy from ESPN, who, interesting that his confidence in the XFL or whatever the league would be called, secondary to the NFL, you know, again, the jokes will be, the XFL failed again. This was a little different than the first time.
Yeah,
but the fact that the NFL, you know, was able to use that as a, you know, almost like a minor league to take from, if they're in, if they can get the NFL kind of on board and the NFL investing in it, then I see his point totally.
NFL is delighted, just like they have with college football, but basically a free minor league system.
Yeah,
why wouldn't they want that? And it's not, that's not a threat. That's not going to be eroding their audience. They're just going to be in a different time of the year than when they're playing. I could see them. And the appetite for football is so big in the States. You know, there is no football in March and April. So perhaps there'd be something there to it. And the networks down there really did get behind it. They had big production teams and put them on in prime time, sports hours on the weekend and everything else. So we'll see. We'll see. But He made a very good point, and then how we all feel as sports fans, or even more so if you work here, thinking with your head, thinking with your heart. Yeah. And I think everyone's heart's like, yeah, they're going to find a way, and we'll be so great, it's so great. And then you think with your head, and even though we are 5 days away from training camp, 5 days away from hockey's training camp, basketball's arriving, we have soccer going on tonight, we're still unsure. And that, I mean, if you think about it with your head, you know how difficult it's all going to be, how many things you're going to have to work out almost right to have this all go. And I'm not just talking about the meals, which was great that he brought it up. Yeah. We have not got into this down
in the NBA bubble. That we can joke about, and that you would think they can change. But are you going to have, you know, in the Raptors case, it's worked out really well. They've been in Florida for 2 weeks, no positive cases that we know of. You know, the Cubs were one of the baseball teams who were having all these issues with testing. Finally, they got the results. Everything was negative. They could continue to practice. We have seen that's not the case for every team. We've seen that's not the case for every NBA team where they've had to shut down practice facilities. And suddenly it's a, well, they have an advantage over us because they got 5 days of extra practicing, and we're suddenly playing them in a game that actually means something. Mm-hmm. That's going to be an issue as well. It is, you know, the integrity of these playoffs and the integrity of just a regular season when you're trying to play just 60 games in baseball. Are you able to execute this safely, but also are you executing it in a way where, you know, it's not a laughing stock, you know, and you are proud to say this team won the ultimate prize at the end of it. 10 years ago, the Miami Heat won the ultimate prize. The decision by LeBron James was polarizing, to say the least, especially if you were in Cleveland. Don Van Notte Jr. is going to join us in about 20 minutes. He was the executive producer behind the television show that was the decision. That plus Al's Brothers Farmers Percentages.
Ooh.
At 5:30. Overdrive continues here on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4.
Now, back to Overdrive.
Overdrive continuing. Mark Rowe in for Brian Hayes this week alongside Mike Johnson and Charlie Montoya, the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, talking to the media today. Mentioned that most of the team is in Toronto. The 12 members still remain in Dunedin. There was a positive case, and anyone that was in close contact stayed behind in Florida. He also said the biggest challenge, getting guys in playing shape. They're in physical shape, but it's about getting them in baseball playing shape. Mm-hmm. Different sports, Mike, but as a hockey player, what kind of timeline are we talking about here? When you would step onto the ice, you're in good shape, you probably worked out all summer. In terms of being ready to play a game, what would you need?
For hockey, because I can't speak to baseball. I don't know exactly how the ligaments need to stretch out in your arms or elbows or whatever, but for hockey, presuming that you had a normal summer of preparation, like the guys may have, like you'd been on the ice skating at 85% capacity for a few weeks. Me personally, I would need to be physically ready probably less than a week.
Really? I mean, really,
my timing might not be perfect. You know, like, you know, your sense of your physicality and your passes and picking pucks out of the air and those kind of things would still sharpen. But as far as getting my body to this point where I can skate, my groins are good, my back is good, I'm not going to hurt myself and get through games. Yeah, I mean, that's the way I always looked at it. I did not suffer from pulled muscles in my career. Can't pull fat. Within a week, totally. Because if I can get through an exhibition game, which you play after 3 days, then it's not, I'm trying as hard as I can in an exhibition game. I don't get hurt. My groins don't get sore. Then I can do that for a regular season game. Now, those early regular season games after 4 days will not be as good as a regular season game after 14 days. And so there's that balance of kind of sharpness. But as far as just physically, as a positional player, goalies, again, might be different. But as a positional player, less than a week for me, which is why I was thinking if we were worried about a compressed schedule, which we're not in the NHL anymore, having a 2 week or 2.5 week training camp, I thought was crazy. Guys have been on the ice for months. They don't need two and a half weeks. They don't get that when they play a regular season training camp before they start playing games, albeit exhibition games. I was surprised, but because there is no rush, they can take that time. But yeah, I don't think the players in hockey need very, very much time at all.
So you're if everything works relatively smoothly here, the level of play come August 1st is going to be high. Like we're not worried about these first games that are going to mean so much, looking a little bit like an exhibition game. Like the intensity will be there, but you just, like you just mentioned, the timing and the stick work, like are you going to see some really bad goals that cost a team in the playing round?
I would think not, because a couple different factors. One, players will realize what's at stake. Like their season, their chase of a Stanley Cup is at stake. So there'll be a heightened sense of focus, mental and physical engagement in the game that you would not see in an exhibition game. Because like once you're 3 years in the league, preseason games do not get your full attention, not like these kind of games would. And the other part is, I would expect they have at least one exhibition game. I don't know, maybe even two. I'm not even sure when the schedule comes out, but they're going to have one. And practices will be way more intense, way more focused, way more structured to get game ready than they would otherwise be. So, no, I'm not expecting it to be anything less than what it should feel like, which is games in a series for elimination. And I think they'll approach it that way. Now, the top four teams, Mark, you may see a little bit of that in those top four teams that do the round robin. You may see some different ice time allocations. You might see some different lineups. There won't be that level of desperation that we associate with elimination hockey, which is part of what makes it so great. And we understand why, because they're not playing that just yet. They are continuing their preparation to those games. But for the guys in the play-in series, it'll be full go, and I don't think you'll... I think it will feel like the first round of the playoffs do every year.
And we're waiting to hear about teams playing exhibition games. I know you jumped all over Ryan Rashog yesterday when he kind of slipped.
Well, he dropped. They got a couple on me. I'm like, wait a second. Yes.
And he's like, well, I don't know anything.
He knows. Yeah. If the prime minister was deciding it, he would know it. Yeah. Maybe not if Gary Bettman is.
He would definitely know it. The 4 o'clock hour of the show brought to you by Lease Busters. Lease Busters will get you out of your car lease today. It's easy as pie, a piece of cake. Avoid penalties and early termination fees. Visit leasebusters.com. Today is the anniversary of the decision by LeBron James. It was 10 years ago today that after a long television production of getting asked questions by Jim Gray, LeBron said, I'm taking my talents to South Beach. Don Van Natta Jr. is the executive producer and host of ESPN's Backstory. They focused on that day and on that television production and what it meant for the NBA and LeBron James. He joins us when we return on Overdrive on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4.